Next up, item five, action item, commercial collection, settled non-game wildlife, Matt Wagner.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and Commission. My name is Matt Wagner. I'm Program Director for Wildlife Diversity. We're coming to you today with proposed changes to our non-game permit program for your consideration and action. To give you some background there, we know that there is a growing demand for non-game for the pet trade and for food items combined with an unrestricted commercial harvest in Texas. We know that title rules in other states has led to increased pressure in Texas from out-of-state dealers and collectors, furthering the growing demand primarily for turtle meat. In particular, there's several studies that have been done that looked at unrestricted harvest on turtle populations. They're listed for you here: box turtles, radiated sliders, soft shells, common snapping turtle, and painted turtles. Many of these species, all but one that's listed, occur in Texas. Looking further at the literature, in general, there is a growing concern, both nationally and internationally, about the decline of turtle populations due to unrestricted commercial harvest. Some of the authors are with us in this room today. They may choose to speak later. Now, the current proposal would implement a whitelist of 84 non-game species legal for commercial collection. For species not on the list, a possession limit of 6 is proposed, but commercial use of species not on the list would be prohibited. Currently, no turtles are on the proposed whitelist, but it is our intent to allow continued lethal control of turtles in private waters. Now, the public comment as of this morning was 91% in favor of the proposal as published. I think the four comments are up to 1,451, opposed 146. The main objections to the current proposal include the matter of allowing commercial collection of turtles on private property, the fact that it would not allow importation of indigenous non-game from other states, and the rule doesn't allow for grandfathering hobbyist or captive breeders. Other opposing views included 26 comments that turtles were a nuisance, 11 comments that we had no scientific justification for this rule, and 7 comments questioning the whitelist approach. Now, the recommended changes to the current proposal would be to allow for importation of non-game into Texas for sale or subsequent exportation with documentation of origin, to allow for grandfathering of existing private collections and to develop a procedure over the next 12 months to handle captive breeding operations. This would probably involve a separate captive breeding permit. Because non-game involves a wide variety of wildlife, we wanted to exempt certain species from this rule, including coyotes, bobcats, and mountain lions, rabbits, which are hunted as essentially non-game, and of course, American bison, we discovered, was a non-game species. There's commercial activity with bison we don't want to affect. A regulatory alternative to accommodate the concern of private property would be to allow the commercial use from private property for 3 species of turtles: red-eared slider, the soft shells, which include 5 different taxa, the common snapping turtle. Annual reporting would continue as currently required by non-game dealers. So the recommendation is that the Commission adopt the amendments concerning commercial non-game with changes as necessary to the proposed text. questions.
Thank you, Matt. We've got a
question.
We have a great number of people signed up to testify. I think what we should do, because we're going to learn a lot from the people who are going to testify, let's up the testimony, and Matt will stand by for questions, as well as Ann Bright and David Sinclair.
No questions.
Sure.
Are you suggesting the proposal include this regulatory alternative?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
The alternative on okay. Got it. On private waters. Good. All right. First up to testify, Elizabeth Schutte and J.P. Laney. Be ready.
Good morning, Commissioners. My name is Elizabeth Schutte. I'm here on behalf of State Representative Hubert Vogt. Representative Vogt's office became aware of this issue here very, very recently, and I'm here to express his concern. Representative Vogt's understanding is that turtle dealers licensed by Texas Parks and Wildlife are capturing wild turtles from Texas streams that are currently posted with fish consumption advisories and fish consumption bans for dangerous levels of human carcinogens. We understand these turtles are being sold to restaurants, including Asian seafood markets in Representative Vogt's district and throughout Harris County. Representative Vogt respectfully asks that the Texas Parks and Wildlife Department work with whatever health departments to immediately conduct an investigation regarding the risk to public health through the consumption of contaminated turtles. So
thank you. Any questions, Ms. Schutte? And well,
what representative was that? The
representative of Houston. And could you very quickly address the issue of jurisdiction on the health issue? Thank you.
For the record, I'm Ann Bright, General Counsel. I mentioned yesterday, state agencies have only those authorities which are specifically granted to it by the Texas legislature and authorities that are implied from that express authority. Regulations regarding non-game species under the Parks and Wildlife Code can be adopted basically based on the protection of the species, not based on human health. And there's actually an Attorney General's opinion on non-game species from a number of years ago dealing with the department's authority to regulate human safety. I think it's now called the State Health Services Department, deals with food consumption, human safety, health and safety issues. We've been in communication with them over this issue. A couple of their representatives were actually here yesterday. We also work with them very closely on other areas of the state. I understand from Phil DeRosier whenever there is a consumption advisory in terms of collection and that sort of thing. And we'll continue to talk to them about this issue.
We communicate that to the Schutte so that they're in the loop and Representative Vogt's office.
Yes, sir.
Of your efforts. Thank you. Thank you, Schutte. Elaine?
Yeah. And on deck is Bryce Burgett, is it? Benjet, I apologize. I couldn't make out the end. Thank you.
Good morning, Commissioners. I want to thank you all for the opportunity to speak. My name is J.P. Laney. I am an attorney in private practice here in Austin, primarily specializing in commercial litigation and administrative law. I'm here on behalf of a group of pet dealers that got together and call ourselves the Coalition of Concerned Pet Dealers. When they got together when this rule came about. You'll hear from others that are part of the group, and you'll hear from Mr. Benjet, who's attorney in my office, who is an appellate lawyer and works at the Third Court of Appeals as a staff attorney, which is the court here in Austin that hears all these agency rulemaking decisions. And Jason Shaw, who's a dealer, and Roy Moreo from El Paso, who has come with 532 signatures from El Paso from people that oppose this rule, and some others that may have stepped in. I want to start off by saying that Chairman Fitzsimmons and I believe Commissioner Friedkin hit it yesterday when they said this is uncharted waters and we need to get it right. There's a way to get it right, And I just don't think this rule is the way to get it right, and for several reasons that myself and Mr. Benjet and others will discuss today. I want to run through what I want to talk about briefly. It's one, Mr. McKinney touched on the point that we don't about the science in different areas that we don't know about, and I think that's a big concern among all the comments to these rules, is we just don't have the data. And this is as Chairman Fitzsimmons said, this is uncharted waters, and there's so many people involved, and it's hard to get your hands around everything. And so I would probably propose that this would be a prime candidate for perhaps some type of negotiated rulemaking, and I'm sure you all understand what that is, and I can talk a little bit about that, but where you bring everyone in, interested stakeholders, and come up to develop a comprehensive rule. And so, like Executive Cook said about the mule deer stuff yesterday, is that 15 years from now, we can look back on this and say Texas is at the forefront of this, and Texas is doing good, and we're the leaders in this area. The pet trade is a large industry, as you will hear from others, and it's greatly affected by this proposal. The other problem is from a legal perspective on this rule, and then we're going to discuss the proposed rule that we had sent in to the staff that we thought fixed the legal issues and the data issues, and you all should have a packet in front of you that has all that stuff and discusses our comments with the rule. There's the legal issues, there's no reason justification, the data issue. The statute clearly sets out legislature mandates that the department do certain things in order to pass a rule to regulate wildlife, and we just don't think that has been done. The whitelist issue, we don't believe the statute allows for a whitelist to be promulgated. We believe that this turns the legislative mandate, the statute, on its head. And if you look at the statute, I run out of time, but if you look at the statute, and I can answer any questions about that issue, we believe the legislature has clearly set out what you have to do before you promulgate this rule and how you do it. And it's not a default of an all-out ban.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Laney? Ann, would you address the, thank you, Mr. Laney. Could you address the whitelist issue for us?
Okay. I'll actually quote from the statute. It allows the commission to, with regard to non-game species, adopt regulations that establish any limits on the taking, possession, propagation, transportation, importation, exportation, sale, or offering for sale of non-game fish and wildlife that the department considers necessary to manage the species. That to me sounds pretty broad. Also wanted to comment on the reason justification is actually a requirement in the adoption as opposed to the proposal. And we will be working on a reason justification to justify whatever the commission's decision is.
Thank you. Next, Mr. Benjet, and then Jason Shaw will be ready.
My name is Bryce Benjet. I've practiced with J.P. Laney, primarily in appellate and administrative law. As J.P. had said, that much of what I've done in the past is hear challenges to rules where courts are considering whether a rule was validly adopted and whether that rule the agency had the statutory authority to propose to adopt that rule. Going on with what you just heard about statutory authority, I know JP had distributed a packet that sort of looked like this. It has the statute in it. You have read section A, subsection A of 67004 as authority, and it's a broad grant. But subsection B of that statute, which you weren't read, says that the regulation shall state the name of the species or subspecies by common and scientific name, and that the department determines to be in need of management under this chapter. What the rule that's currently proposed does, and with regard to as it was listed or any of the alternatives, is it proposes a whitelist saying you can deal in these species, and anything off that species is prohibited. That's regulation. I think that we counted 118 species that are being managed by Texas Parks and Wildlife under this rule without being identified. And I think that's a huge problem, and I think that if this rule is adopted, that it's not going to be a valid rule. That is one of the things that I really want to talk about, is the statutory authority issue. and that the rule as proposed, even as the alternatives, is not a valid rule, and that the Texas Parks and Wildlife does not have the authority to do that. She has read to you a broad grant, but the very same provision that gives you that broad grant then takes the authority away in terms of you have to be specific in the species that you name, and you have to make a specific determination as to each one of those species that you are regulating that there is a need for that regulation. And these proposed rules go against that entire idea in the statute. The whole idea is that we need to identify species to regulate and know why we're regulating them. And this rule sort of says the default is regulation, and you know, to the extent that we're going to allow any activity, those are the only ones we're going to talk about. And so that's, I think, a big problem. And it also comes into the reason justification issue. I think that there's a, we're going to hear a lot of biology in this, but what's been cited by the staff is a bunch of literature that does not deal with actual census of, we don't know how many turtles are out there. We don't have a good idea of that from what I know, and we don't have a good idea in terms of what a sustainable level of activity is. And so what we've got in here in tab 3 is a proposal, and actually it's a tab 4 is a proposal that will be a rule that would give you that information which would allow you to make that decision. So
good. I think there are a couple of folks have questions for you, so you'll be allowed a little more time. Are you suggesting that in the, I'll just think of an example.
Sure.
We have regulations on game birds, season, bag limit, possession. We don't have seasons on non-game songbirds, for instance. You're saying that we should have listed the species, every single one that you can't shoot?
Well, I'm looking at the statute here, and the statute says that any regulation, you have a broad authority to regulate, but then any regulation that you have shall state the name of the species or subspecies by common and scientific name.
Yeah, it doesn't say by exclusion. It says you have to state the species, and the species is stated
in
on the white list. So,
yeah.
Anne, could you address this? I mean, to follow this logic, all of our game laws are out the window because we don't list every songbird you can't shoot.
One thing I will say is that in terms of game species and various species, the Parks and Wildlife Code is filled with different laws for different types of species. So what may be appropriate or not appropriate for deer, for example, is not necessarily going to be the same law that's going to apply to non-game. And I think it's really just going to come down to a question of what is meant by the phrase to be in need of management. I mean, I think we've determined that there should be a prohibition on certain species, and the species that are listed, and they are listed by their scientific name and their common name in the proposed rule, are in need of management. And that's what we're hoping this will do, is gather data and manage those species.
You're comfortable with our procedure?
I'm comfortable with it, but as you know, if we get sued, we'll find out.
If we get sued, we'll see you in the courtyard.
Mr. Benzette, I have a question. What evidence does your group have to indicate that the turtle population in Texas is not vulnerable at the present time?
Well, I don't think that there is evidence that it's not vulnerable. I think that the rational conclusion from some suggestion that there is a vulnerability is to actually monitor this. What we have learned in terms of the reporting is there is a reporting scheme in effect. We've proposed rules that would expand that reporting, because right now the people who are actually taking the wildlife from that are actually doing the collecting are not reporting to the department.
Right.
But the department can get that information, and they have it.
Yeah, but that's not my question. What I'm saying is, what evidence do you have to dispute that, in fact, the population is vulnerable? Do you have a study or anything to dispute it?
Well, I think that there's no question that there is evidence that turtles have a certain vulnerability.
Okay.
I think that there's no data on what a sustainable activity is, and that the only rational conclusion you can make from simply evidence of some vulnerability is close monitoring and a rule that is based on that monitoring.
But you don't have a study or data to furnish to us?
No, I think okay. That's something.
One other question. Sure. We do have the authority, do we not, to regulate turtles in the event that they're at risk in the state?
Well, I think you could place them on an endangered list, for example. And I think that if there is data that says that there is a specific risk and that you properly identify what that risk is and that is based on sound, peer-reviewed science,
okay, but I thought
Texas turtles, then you would have that authority. I just don't think we have it here.
Well, I think we're going to hear some of it here in a little bit. Any other questions? Mr. Friedkin, next up, Jason Shaw. Then Peter, Paul, hope I pronounced this right, Van Dyke, be ready. Mr. Shaw.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Jason Shaw. I represent the Coalition of Concerned Pet Dealers and my company, U.S. Global Exotics. I'm based in Arlington, Texas. I employ 14 full-time people. I'm involved in the buying and selling of exotic animals, including animals that we're talking about today. I'm involved in comprehensive export to Europe and Asia, as well as distributing within the United States and within the state of Texas. My position, or our position, is that the problem is we see no justification or data to back up the inclusion or exclusion of species that are on this white list. We basically don't understand how the department has included certain species and excluded others. And just to give a quick example is the Merriam kangaroo rat, which is included that we can trade in it, yet another species, the Ord's kangaroo rat, is excluded. Our experience as dealers and talking to the people on the field is that, you know, out of those two species, the Ord's is more plentiful in the wild. So this is just an example of where we don't see the logic in how the list has come about. And the same thing can be said for things in the, for species in the lizard section, and the amphibian section, and the mammal section. We just can't see how the department comes to find that list. One of the things is many of the species that are left off the list are actually not even collected. From my personal knowledge, they're not even collected in this state. We buy, for example, the long-nosed leopard lizard, which is not on the proposed list, from Nevada primarily. I very rarely buy this species in this state. So this list is going to really restrict, you know, what I can buy and sell, and I don't see how that's going to affect the natural resource of Texas. Basically, By excluding an animal like that, excluding animals that I need as part of my business, it puts me at an unfair disadvantage. I'm competing with California pet dealers, Florida, Illinois. I mean, I'm just one dealer in a huge country. And if these guys have the ability to sell the stuff that we can't, it basically can force my customers that are, in Europe, Asia, to go to those guys and buy, those animals from them. So, people tend to buy, animals from somewhere they can get everything. You know, taking off all these turtles, for example, which is, for me, is a big part of my business during, in the next 3 months, of baby turtles that I buy from Louisiana, from Arkansas, from Florida. We don't really buy a whole lot of turtles, from the state. And by the rules how it's written is going to really restrict what we can do as a company. And I'm out of time already. So, do you have any questions? That's it.
Any questions? Yeah.
Briefly, Mike, can you address how we come up with the rationale for coming up with a white list and that? And
yes, sir. The white list was developed by circulating among the various herpetological groups. It's made up of 84 species that we know to be commercially used. either appearing in pet stores or hobbyists are using them for buying and selling, breeding. We also took a look at the range, where these animals occur. Are they fairly widely distributed? Are they relatively common? And to put them on a list to get better information about the demand for these animals in the pet market.
Mr. Parker?
Greg, as we're developing these rules for these commercial dealers, is there going to be a bag limit? Or is there going to be a pounds, how many pounds or how many head he can sell in a day or a month or a season? Is there going to be a season? Is there, you know, or is it just, does he just have open season? Grab all he can get?
There would be no restrictions on the numbers that would be collected of species on the list. The rule would, should you choose to amend it, would also allow unrestricted take on private waters of the three turtles that we mentioned. Our job over the next year is to look at that information and come back to you with further restrictions if needed and just update you about how the rule is working.
Well, thank you, Matt. Just a little history here. Those of you might not have been here, when we started the non-game, this one was back in 99.
That's when the permit was established.
The whole idea was to have a legitimate way to gather the data. At that time, 499, there was unrestricted gathering and collecting all over the state. So as we go through all this today, I want everybody to remember we're moving towards restriction. We are not creating an opportunity here. We are restricting what is presently unrestricted.
How does this rule affect the issue the gentleman raised regarding trade in species that are not from Texas? He's suggesting it shuts it down if they weren't collected here. I know point of origin is mentioned here, but how is that being dealt with?
We would create a procedure for the importation of non-game into Texas for sale or subsequent exportation. That would be a modification of something like the trip ticket where there's a buyer, there's a seller. The Parks and Wildlife Department will get a copy of that transaction and the person in possession of those animals.
So if another state allows collection of any number of species we're restricting, an importer could still bring it in and potentially handle it. I know in DFW at the airport that's probably fairly common for these folks.
Correct.
He's wrong in saying they'll be put out of business for that issue.
We've met with Mr. Shaw and Mr. Laney and discuss this. We have recognized the need and made the accommodation. We're going a long way.
Got quite a few folks. That's fire. Matt, thanks for standing by. Peter Paul Van Dyke and Mike Forstner, are you ready?
Thank you, Commissioners. My name is Peter Paul Van Dyke. I represent Conservation International as well as the IUCN Tortoise and Freshwater Turtle Specialist Group, a global network of about 300 turtle conservationists, academics, and regulatory authorities.
Can you get a little closer to your line?
I shall find that. Thank you for this opportunity to speak in favor of the proposed regulations. I have been working on Asian turtle conservation for the past 15 years, of which the last 10 years have been focusing on specifically on trade issues. In 1989, many of us got together in Phnom Penh at a workshop to take stock of what was happening. We were concerned about trade levels in Asia, but we didn't quite have the picture. So we got together and we put together this proceedings volume, and I will make this one available to you later. But Very shortly, what we found is that the East Asian or Chinese import trade started in 1989, so only 10 years at that time. And it was a consumption trade. The consumption trade is several orders of magnitude larger in Asia than the pet trade, and it exceeds probably the volume of the worldwide pet trade in turtles, even if it doesn't do in numbers. In those 10 years, the countries of Vietnam and Bangladesh have been completely emptied of their turtle populations. Indonesia, Malaysia, Cambodia, and Laos and Myanmar were ongoing as being emptied. The demand is completely non-selective. Any turtle will do, any species, any size. There is a premium placed on soft shells, subsequently a premium price developed for snapping turtles, but any turtle is welcome for the trade. The total trade amounts to 10 to 20 million animals per year in China. That is a combination of domestic farm production as well as live imports from other places. What we have seen are 3 to 5 year boom and bust cycles per country, per area. Trade starts, moves on, and populations collapse, and the trade moves on to a different area. So the overall trade volumes across Asia stay stable, giving an impression of sustainability, but it is a mirage. It is not sustainable on a population-by-population basis. The exploitation trade for consumption targets large adult animals, and it places often a premium on females because they contain eggs. This is about the quickest way of driving the turtle population down, as some of my colleagues will certainly tell you. Essentially, this trade exploits the standing crop, and with the very low recruitment and slow growth rates of turtles inherent in their biology, recovery takes decades in the absence of other threats. In the presence of other threats, a turtle population may never recover. We have also noticed that there are very substantial identification challenges in Asia. Just we applaud the proposed regulations, and we urge you that any collection that you may consider would be monitored very closely and in real time, given that you have a 3 to 5 year boom and bust cycle. Thank you.
Thank you very much. If I understand your comment, it's that nowhere in the world is this turtle trade been sustainable. It just moves from extirpation to extirpation.
Correct. The consumption trade for large adult animals has never been sustainable.
Any other questions? Thank you very much. Appreciate it. And I thank you for the work you're doing with us in Mexico with Conservation International. I've been involved in that, and you've done a great job. Thanks.
Good morning, Commissioners. I'm Dr. Michael Forstner. I'm a professor at Texas State. I've spoken to you before. One, I just want the most important thing you need to hear from me this morning is I congratulate you on both your attention to this matter and on sponsoring Matt Wagner and his people for the canvas of the communities, academic, professional, as well as hobbyist and commercial, to figure out how to do this. I echo your concerns from yesterday on three pieces of this. One is, our law enforcement people are can-do folks. You ask them to do something, they're going to say they can do it. One thing I heard yesterday while you were discussing this was our lead for law enforcement say, enforcing a ban is easier than enforcing a partial ban. We're talking about just the amendment on turtles. And just, I'd like you to consider that as you go forward. The other thing is, you brought up funding this, putting the onus of funding the data management onto the commercial dealers. That has to happen. But don't forget that now we are moving toward assessment of these stocks as if though they were one of our game species or a resource to be managed. The cost of that assessment, just like we do our inland fisheries, and thinking about it as aquaculture is a good way to approach freshwater turtles, also has to be encountered in those costs. And the last thing is, to give a piece of information, you've heard comments about there's no data. I have data. We have publications we've sent in from one of the few non-game grants that was funded by the department. The kicker in this for me is, Peter Paul just said it, this harvest doesn't work the way that all of us think about harvest
when we talk about a natural resource. This is go in, strip the population to the lowest levels you can because that's what's profitable, and move on. We have one population that we have monitored since 1994 when it was harvested. It took 12 years for the first adult to return to that population, and we still don't know if it was an animal that returned by recruitment, it was a baby and we missed it, or if it migrated in. This year, 2 weeks ago, we performed our survey for this year. What amazes me is that the repopulation, think about a forest management scheme. We take the standing crop. The repopulation is no longer the same community of turtles that was present in 1994 and earlier. It's a different group of turtles, one of which is very common, one of which is uncommon, and it was the uncommon turtle today that was the most abundant prior to harvest. That population has never recovered, and it is protected, quote-unquote, both civically and by the personnel that managed that spring. Thank you, gentlemen.
Any questions for Dr. Forster? Thank you, Mike. Yes, Commissioner Parker's got a question for you.
Yes, sir.
If we launch onto this program today, what tweaking could be done to further protect these various species of, and I'm just going to group them all together, turtles?
Well, you know how this goes. You hear things from other sides and you're able to draw on that inference to make decisions or to help your own position as you go forward. You just said it, sir. This isn't about making a dramatic step forward. This is about moving forward. I can tell you that I am torn between the idea of either support of a complete ban on turtles because of their implicit biology or not. And I am unable to give you ironclad data that says all of the species are impacted heavily. I can do so for soft-shell turtles. It's in peer review right now, and that's a good standard for review. And we can do it for the population of hard-shell river turtles that we've evaluated. I believe that there is an advantage in obtaining real-time information. I'm really worried about the same thing that Commissioner Ramos said about getting the information in a way that we can use it. But I think we can do that, but it's going to require an enormous investment in effort and the personnel to actually do so. And I don't know. I tried napkin math last night to figure out, I mean, how many dealer permits are there? How many commercial permits are there in general? Can you make them big enough that they're still making their money and you're able to fund what it takes? We're doing a turtle assessment in Texas right now. We are in our third year. We have done so for the National Park Service beginning in 1998 and continuously for the last 3 years. The cost of that is $138,000 to date. Can we really generate, and that's one tax on it, we're doing everything in the river while we're at it. What we've shown in that information is that there's an impact on the abalone fishery. And Dr. McKinney would know the signature. It's exactly the signature you would see in any fishery. The largest individuals are gone first. And the population stays stable for a while as the adults collapse out. But the issue with females is those who are reproductive individuals. So to address directly what you asked me, I believe we collect the information that you post. I would hope that what we come to is the same thing we've done with everything else. We have a post-reproductive season in which harvest is done. That protects the females that are doing the recruitment, laying of eggs. And that we have upper size limits and bag limits. And that we do that after we know what the demand is and when we've assessed the stocks. But this is a top-heavy situation. You have to have the funds to assess those things. And the total economy of this doesn't appear to be sufficient to support the necessity that underlies doing the management and the strategy. Right? We have the tools, and we've assessed some of those stocks right now, and we've shown there's an impact. The question now is, how do you go back in and say what is sustainable or not? And I think we do it the same way we've done redfish as a fishery, speckled sea trout. I think it's remarkably coincidental that today we talked about the gillnet ban in Alabama. Do you remember the brouhaha when we talked about gillnets in Texas? Mm-hmm. We're not in that situation this morning, and yet no one has addressed things like bycatching turtle traps, right? Those guys, you put a turtle trap, I do this. I just did it for 2 weeks straight. You put a turtle trap in the water, you catch everything that's in the water. And you catch it regardless of taxon or species. And there are good or bad ways to do that, but it's going to be an incredible force against law enforcement to try to figure out what is and is not. And I will bring up one other thing. I mentioned this to Matt Wagner. When you propose a rule, you have to also look at the laws of unintended consequences. If we have commercial harvest of turtles in Texas, there will be a seizure of a shipment of turtles that were legally collected. What do we do with them? Right? It's one other snarl in all of this that we have to deal with. I think it's possible to get the sustainable harvest of some of the taxa in Texas. Matt, when he addressed how that whitelist was put together, he canvassed everyone that was there. We just spent an enormous amount of time on a state wildlife plan. And he canvassed the same authorities. And they said, these are abundant, they're widely distributed, they can probably take some harvest. And then we managed the resource. I hope that that answered.
Do you say manage the resource by size?
You will probably, if we look at Malaquemines, which is something that Texas just dealt with a month ago, but if we look at Malaquemines in general, it's a historical data set in the U.S. There was a tremendous fishery for Malaquemines terrapin, which is the diamondback terrapin. There was a tremendous fishery in the U.S. in the 1900s, early 1900s. That fishery collapsed. And I'm treating these turtles as a fishery. That fishery completely collapsed. I've done work on Malaquemines in Florida for 10 years, several publications that are now out, and again in Texas. The Malaquemines fishery took 50 years to recover to where any take could be possible, and that's in the last few years. And now that we're watching that, those fisheries have started to decline again, and states have come in. That's one of the first taxa on the northeast coastal states that have been mandated and regulated. What they've done is they've set things like upper size limits, so you leave the females in the population, and harvest and bag limits, as well as seasonal limits. Almost every turtle in our state will have reproduced. It's tough, folks, Brownsville to the Panhandle, but every turtle in our state will have reproduced by or about June 15th, at least their first clutch. So there's ways we can do this, and I'm not against the idea of collecting the information and being able to do what we need to do.
Okay, now let me ask you,
yes.
Let me ask you one more question. In your opinion, do you think what we are proposing to do is throwing too big a sheet over the entire thing, or do you think that we should tweak it? As I mentioned in my first question to you, do you think that it needs to have more tweaking than what we're doing now? And what we're doing now is we're throwing the broad sheet over it and say, yes, you can do these in private waters. You can take whatever you want, however many you want.
My professional opinion is non-game wildlife is a resource in our state is on fire. We need to put it out. That's what I think. You're making a step forward. Are you going far enough? I cannot, in a legally defensible format, tell you if you're going far enough or not, or too far. I can tell you that every bit of evidence that I have, I don't know, 20 years in the field in Texas, non-game and population genetics ever since I started. My mentor is in the audience. He's one of the lead herpetologists in our state. My boss is in the just retired, stepped down from chair. Boss is in the audience. Another lead herpetologist in the state. All of us have seen the same thing happen. There is nowhere I have gone where I have not seen a decline in total abundance take a tax on. So should you go to a complete ban? I think that there's some way to come to sustainable harvest for some of these taxa. Is a private-public water split going to be enough? I think it's a law enforcement nightmare and a data-keeping monster. But if it can be implemented and done, then we can gather information that's important. Should you go to what amounts to seasonal and harvest limits on these things, my God, we've done this for 100 years. Of course you should. I mean, there's no question. It's just I am unaware of the legal process that we are in now well enough to tell you that the thing to do is to set these changes to that. I believe that you can move forward from where you are with the expectation, mine implicitly, that the expectation is you will come back and revise this in a way that makes it even better than what we've got now. That's what I think.
But by the time we come back to revise it, are we going to put ourselves in a 20-year hole? You know, it's like Will Rogers said, you know, when you find yourself in a hole, stop digging.
One population, again, I will give you one population that Jim Dixon and I have studied since 1988. It was harvested one time commercially in 1994. That population has not recovered 2 weeks ago.
Now, is it public water or private water?
It is in public waters.
Right.
And it is a, what makes that important is it's a public water, but it's a protected public water. So even inside it, taking them wasn't okay, and it was done anyway. When you open up private waters, in effect, you are creating a situation just like what Peter Paul said. Instead of Asia, I know that that's a long, right? Let's substitute our counties. This is not, we are going in and harvesting dove in a migration, and we are going on with the stock. We are harvesting everything that's there because that's what's profitable, and then moving forward.
Right. One more time, let's make something clear. We are not opening anything up here today.
Right.
We are constricting. We are not creating a program. We are restricting what is presently unrestricted.
You're absolutely right. By restricting the case that you have, the situation will become one. I'll give you the best analogy I can. What the private-public water split does is it says, I'm going to purchase a license that allows me to hunt turtles. When I do so, just like I do with deer, it allows me to take every deer on my property and sell them for their meat, hide, and horns, and my expectation is that they will be restocked from public waters. And I'm scared about a state resource being sold, even if it's on private land. So that was expressed
right now, and what we're trying to do here is get a handle. I really appreciate your time. We've got 20 other people signed up to testify. Thank you, sports. Matt, real quickly, can you address the issue of how long it would take Wildlife Division to come up with some take criteria, bag and season criteria for those on the white list?
I think we could come back to you within a year and give you an update of where we are, what we think we need to do from there.
This thing's going on for 20 years.
Yeah, but the way
unrestricted.
The way we look at this,
year.
Right now the glass is half or is empty. We're getting it half full.
Right.
Are we doing enough? I think it's a move towards sustainability.
Okay.
I'd also like to see a study methodology,
yes.
and how we're going to study it. Obviously, that's very important, and also the law enforcement implications and how we might address some of those through different forms or whatever we can do to track specifically where these turtles are coming from.
Beginning September 1. Yes. Sorry. September 1, we do have a research project to work with Texas A&M and Mike Forster on.
Okay, so you'll get back to us before, certainly, I would hope, by our next meeting with kind of some parameters.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Well, Dr. Forster's comment about the June date, I mean, it just makes so much sense after reproduction. Thanks, Matt. Francis Rose and Joe Flanagan, be ready.
Thank you. My name is Francis Rose. I'm a professor of biology. I was at Texas Tech University for 25 years. I moved to San Marcos in 1991, and I basically study turtles. I've studied turtles in Texas since 1969. Following populations, I'm basically associated with the ecology, basic biology of turtles, aquatic turtles, and the Texas tortoise, which I've studied since 1969. I've seen a dramatic decrease in the Texas tortoise over that period of time. Although it is a protected. My point is that it is already protected, so forth and so on. I think that looking at the proposal that's before you, it seems sound to me. It seems like a good compromise on these issues. I think that it is a step forward as we narrow this down. I did want to point out that I've heard anybody mention the problems yet of predation on these turtles relative to fire ants. In one study we're doing right now, it appears that fire ants get some, either the raccoons or the fire ants get approximately 99% of the turtles that are in our study area. So they actually get the eggs in the ground. I've not seen that. We're also working with upper respiratory disease in tortoises and in salmonella infection. With the new genetic technique from salmonella, we're finding that the aquatic turtles really have a lot of salmonella we didn't think that they had before, and that some of these are human pathogenic. And so this is my area. I wanted to point out that it's unregulated means just that, it's unregulated. And they cannot, these turtles that live, we have one turtle, for example, that's over 90 years old now. That we know it has been passed from person to person in wills, so we know how old this turtle is. If you think that these two turtles only have to make two other turtles for the population level to stay swimming at the same level. So if you start moving them out in large numbers, then it has no other mathematical deduction other than it will reduce the population to significant level. I think they deserve protection. I think we should protect them. Commissioner Parker pointed out about relative to whether or not this is a large sheet. I wouldn't put a large sheet over it. I'd put a blanket over it.
You support the proposal, and you think it's a good compromise. Do you think it's reasonable for us to think we can gather some data in a short enough period of time to make some good regulatory decisions?
Yes.
Thank you, Doc. Next up, Joe Flanagan, then Chris Jones, be ready.
Good morning. Thank you for my opportunity to speak. I'm the Director of Veterinary Services at the Houston Zoo. I've been working as a veterinarian in Houston for about 25 years. And on any given day, I may treat hummingbirds or elephants. And so I'm very accustomed to applying a base set of knowledge that I have to another situation. And so what I'm going to do here is, outside the zoo fences, my project, most of my time is, in fact, dedicated to toads, turtles, and prairie chickens. And the zoo is very actively involved in conservation of those three groups. I am personally involved with the recovery efforts for Galapagos tortoises and Kemp's Ridley sea turtles. Galapagos tortoises were an unlimited resource that would survive quite well, and the quality of meat would survive shipping and would last for months under your hold of your ship. Same reason that we want to harvest turtles in Texas is because the meat is good and it'll survive 90 hours of shipment to China. The population of tortoises on Espanola Island, Hood Island, was reduced to 13 individuals. Those 13 individuals were brought into captivity in about 1970 for a captive rearing program. They've produced thousands of eggs, hundreds of babies, and they've been repopulating the island of Espanola since 1975. That program has cost millions of dollars and decades of time, and the population is not yet recovered. And the program is ongoing. There are still people working on a daily basis to recover that. The Kemp's Ridley sea turtle was found nesting in the late 40s with 40,000 animals on the beach. They were in one day. And in the early 80s, the total number of nests was below 1,000 because of over-harvest, unregulated harvest. Millions of dollars, decades of work. And last year, on the Texas coast, there were 102 nests. And that's after releasing in a captive rearing program that raises babies to a year of age when they're less likely to be predated by other animals, raccoons, fire ants, etc. 20,000 animals have been released. All of them are now mature. 102 nests. One out of 200 animals released came back to nest. When you manage white-tailed deer, you harvest the prize, which is the buck, a nice big buck. If you want to reduce your population, you allow harvest of does. If you're only harvesting males, your population is going to continue to grow, unless there's a habitat issue. If the prize for a turtle harvest is a female, and she's gravid, and you're going to take your reproductive potential completely out of the population. And when it comes down to identification of individuals, I work at the zoo. We just emptied an exhibit. We had spiders, cooters. We had a number of different species from a number of different environmental areas. But curator of herpetology with over 25 years of experience, his associate and myself stood and looked at a pile of turtles, couldn't tell a rayered spider from a cooter because of algae. They wouldn't let their heads out. You could not identify the turtle easily without closely examining them. You can't just look to open a box and say, yep, they're all rated twice. So that's all I have to say. Thank you for your time.
That was very useful. Anybody have questions of the doctor before? No? Thank you. Chris Jones?
Honorable Commissioners and Executive Director, I appreciate the opportunity to comment. My name is Chris Jones. I represent the Texas Conservation Alliance, the state affiliate for Texas of the National Wildlife Federation. This agency does have jurisdiction to enact wildlife laws to protect public health. A paramount duty of all state Texas agencies, it always, always favors eliminating risk to public health and also an obligation to act scientifically. I ask you today, prohibit commercial harvest of turtles from public and private waters in Texas for the following reasons. Both private and public waters produce contaminated turtles that are unfit for human consumption. Fish and Wildlife Service published that private waters in Texas are contaminated with methylmercury, a cancer-causing industrial emission that falls from the atmosphere onto private lands and contaminates private waters, in addition to agricultural runoff. Contaminants from public waters move into private waters during flood events. Turtle harvest for human consumption poses a health risk to consumers and should be prohibited. Internal medicine, digestive and liver diseases, gastroenterology, Dr. Willis Madry, MD, UT Southwestern Medical School, 2 days ago stated, thank you for the opportunity to comment. My area of interest is in drug-induced liver injury. From the background document, it is my opinion the harvesting of these turtles should cease. Commissioners, the non-game program has created a risk of harvesting contaminated wild turtles for food from Texas rivers that are posted with fish consumption advisories and bans by the Department of Health. Studies show that turtles, because they live so long, more than 80 years, bioaccumulate and retain aquatic contaminants at significantly higher concentrations than other aquatic animals. A professor from Ohio University found enough PCBs in one snapping turtle to kill a large mammal. You must have seen the video of more than 400 pounds of meat turtles being taken from the Trinity River in downtown Dallas and sold to an Asian seafood market in DFW. Trinity River presently has a fish ban. There is no private property right to wild turtles that live on private land, regardless if the water is private or public. The public trust doctrine grants this agency the authority to conserve and manage all wildlife on private lands and private waters for the benefit of the public. Many landowners claim title erroneously to public waters and will allow commercial harvest. Your LE in DFW in East Texas do not want this trade, and they understand the impact from their own field observations. In May of last year, this agency and biologists from UT observed wild adult turtles sold as food in Asian seafood markets that derive from non-game licensees of our program. Now is the time to act scientifically, objectively, and analyze Mr. Wagner's recommendation and respect the risk associated with opening private waters to commercial harvest. Our brothers and sisters in Texas and China depend on us ensuring a safe and contaminated free food. No one has the right to privatize the public trust in a way that creates a known risk to public health. Thank you very much.
Once again, we're not opening a program. We are restricting a program that is presently open. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Next up, Heather Lowe. Oh, I'm sorry. Heather, come on. I skipped Chuck Evans. Chuck Evans, be ready.
Good morning, Commissioners. I'm Heather Lowe, the Assistant Curator of Conservation Science at the Fort Worth Zoo. I'm here to ask that you approve the legislation as proposed last month to ban the commercial harvest of turtles in Texas. I've been at Fort Worth Zoo for 12 years, and during that time I've conducted a significant amount of research on conservation issues specific to this state. I'm sure that you all know a lot about Texas wild, and I've lived and breathed Texas wild for a long time. Beyond that, I am a native Texan. I'm proud of that, and I hold a really deep-seated pride in this state and its wildlife heritage. Some of the world's leading experts have already filled you in on Asian turtle crisis, but the world is shrinking, and globalization has enabled this crisis to reach our waters here. Gentlemen, there's little that we can do to stem that conservation crisis on the other side of the planet, but you hold the power to keep it from robbing Texas of its native fauna. There are those who claim this is a private landowner issue. I know a lot about private landowner issues, and given the fact that 97% of Texas is in private hands, I understand that there's some sensitivity. But I think that in this case, the argument is being twisted. Stewardship that encourages the presence of deer, other game species, things like that on private lands, obviously benefit a bevy of species. And they can benefit that landowner economically because they can sell hunting leases. I mean, it's a complete win-win, but that's not what we're talking about here. There's no good land manager out there that would go out once a year and wipe their property a deer mistake in the market and then come back and expect the population to be there again. It's just not reasonable. Beyond that, we have no research that shows that any level of turtle harvest is sustainable. I think that, you know, Mr. Van Dyke told us that. There's nothing that tells us that these populations are going to come back. The situation that we are facing really is a textbook example of market hunting. I mean, we have one trapper alone who's already claimed that he has a co-op of 450 people working for him, and he has contract quotas for 300,000 turtles a year. That's insane. That's a lot of animals leaving the state. We have an obligation to learn from our history, and we have a laundry list of examples of species that have been washed out on market hunting or have come close to it. You've got passenger pigeons. You've got, you know, migratory birds in the late 19th century. There's all kinds of examples, and we have an obligation to learn from this. For example, specific to turtles, we just have to look to Asia. And it's in our recent history. It's been in the past generation. It's 20 years wiped out. Legislation designed to restrict commercial harvest to just private waters doesn't seem like a very reasonable solution to me at this time. A, because turtles don't know any boundaries, and B, because there's no way for a wildlife inspector to look at a turtle and know its origin. It's just not. It's a lot to ask of somebody. And you can't expect from people who are driven by money that they're not going to trap wherever they can get something that they can sell. We're also battling a lot of myths that are floating around about how turtles are adversely affecting the ecology of ponds in Texas. They're wiping out ducks, wiping all that sort of stuff. A lot of these rumors are going around are not scientifically based, but we do have scientific studies that tell us about the important role that chelonians play in the ecology in which they exist. You know, they're scavengers. They're very important. And when you take them out, you can see what happens to the ponds. It's been published. I just think that this panel is facing a challenge that none of your predecessors have ever had to face. No group before you has ever had to face globalization and its effects on wildlife. And I just urge you to rise to that challenge, because I'm afraid if we allow it to continue, our turtle populations are wiped out. We're not going to have the luxury of looking back and saying that we didn't know what happened.
Thank you. I think you make a very good point there, Heather. Did we have a question from Robert Brown?
Initially, I thought you said you support this proposed legislation, but it sounds to me like what you actually support is just a total ban.
Total ban, okay. For turtles.
Right. And again, you understand, nobody's creating a new program for harvest. It's a step, clearly, for a ban in public waters. And then the question is, how do we monitor on private? You make a very good point, and I think it's a challenge to this commission and this department over the next year to remember that this has never been sustainable anywhere in the world with any species of turtle. And we're going to ask ourselves if we can find a way to do that on private land or not. But clearly, this commission is not going to risk the resource if it can't be done. And, you know, you put us on notice. You're absolutely right. It hadn't worked anywhere else on the globe. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chuck Evans?
Yeah. My name is Chuck Evans, and I'm a dealer, a non-game dealer, and I'm also a collector. I get out in the field. I know what's out there and what's not. We have in the public waters, there's a large population of turtles that, you know, she claimed there was 300,000 whatever taken out. Well, that's not even, you know, a drop in the bucket. There's millions of turtles in Texas. The banning of certain species there will create a black market on premium prices and everything that it'll make it to where nobody's reporting anything that they're catching. Also, it creates a big problem for you know, for the game wardens, as far as the total ban on that. I just think that it's not. I mean, you know, the total ban is. There's a lot of species that I catch, and a lot of numbers that are, like I say, not going to be on the list and everything. That It's just like you allow deer hunting for a reason, so that they don't all overpopulate and become a problem. Well, if you do the total ban on the turtles, I think it's going to create the same problem. We've been able to catch for 20 years, and we still got a huge population of turtles out there. If you put the ban on there, then the turtles will, in my opinion, overpopulate, and they will create problems in your fisheries. They do predate on fish, on their eggs, on everything that has to do with that. So I propose that, instead of the total ban, that you put a lot of the other species of turtles that weren't on your list there back on the list, and keep an eye on the populations instead of just doing an emergency ban on them. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Dixon and Thomas Simpson, be ready.
Commissioners, I am James R. Dixon, Professor Emeritus from Texas A&M University, and an old turtle biologist, and a professor and writer of books for the state of Texas and amphibians and reptiles. I want to particularly congratulate this commission and its staff who sit before me, that's you guys, for insight and vision that you have that go beyond the status quo. We've been in this situation a long time. The proposed effort to gather data on the sustainability of turtle populations and to further protect this resource is highly commendable. We've needed this for a long time. I strongly urge each of you to stay the course and produce a viable product that benefits the resource and its users. Thank you.
Thank you, Professor Dixon. That's good advice. Next, Thomas Simpson and Randall Briggs, be ready.
My name is Thomas Simpson. I am a member of the faculty at Texas State University. I teach several wildlife-related courses there in the biology department. I want to commend you for considering these proposals, and I want to commend also Matt Wagner and his staff and the diversity group for putting together the data that they had at hand and bringing this situation up today. I wholeheartedly support, I would prefer an outright ban to commercial turtle harvest, but I think that the proposed proposals are a good compromise. I think that gathering the data so that you can make a further tweaking, further judgments on this within a reasonable time is an appropriate way to go. It's often been said that if we don't know history, we're doomed to repeat it. And I've heard people say here several times that there has been no documented, sustained, unlimited harvest of turtles in the world. I would go further and say there is no documented, sustained, unlimited harvest of any wildlife species in this nation or worldwide. It just cannot happen. It's not sustainable. So if you will keep that in mind, I certainly appreciate the opportunity to make this statement.
Thank you, Mr. Simpson. Go ahead, Commissioner.
Yes, sir. Do I understand that you concur with other people that have come before us that a people cannot feed another people with a natural resource?
I agree with that. Yes. I think that we're stretching our resources already. And as Dr. Rose brought out, turtles face tremendous natural mortality. And when you add on that a commercial harvest, it becomes unsustainable very quickly.
Do turtles move about? Do they, if we say that we're not going to trap them in public waters, then do turtles stay in one spot, or do they travel back and forth? Would they go over to Dan Friedkin's pond, and then do they come back to public waters? Or
it depends upon the species. Some species do travel overland. Species can travel within, those that are restricted to waterways will stay within those waterways. Like soft shells do not get out and travel great distances overland. But I think we've all seen red eared sliders and snapping turtles they have a limited ability to move across land. So it's, what's in private waters doesn't always stay there. What's in public waters doesn't always stay there.
Any further questions for anyone? Thank you, Mr. Simpson. The next one up is Mr. Randall Briggs with Sam Henderson next after him.
Good afternoon. My name is Randall Briggs. I believe that the turtles, if they're completely controlled where they can't be used, that they will overpopulate, because you can put snappers in a small pond, and they actually put ducks on a pond in the last month, and we have about 6 ducks left out of the 21 ducks we put on the pond, and the snappers are what are killing them. The fish, they eat a lot of our fish. Where a snapper will catch a fish, he'll just take a bite out of it, and it's all that the fish gets away. And then he has to kill another one to survive. And if you don't regulate them, they're going to get to the point where there's just too many of them. And I believe that they will take over populations of other animals.
Thank you. Any comments from me, Commissioner? Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Briggs. Mr. Sam Henderson is next with Mr. Ellis Gilliland next.
My name is Sam Henderson. I'm from Gordon. It's a small town in north central Texas. I am a turtle trapper. I come in with that paper prepared, but it ended up prepared. I saw Matt's presentation on the regulation where he's going to leave the private water alone. My feeling on that is the public water, it should be managed and enforced. Rather than ban, example of certain waters, certain species, and sizes of certain species. But the private water, it's proposed on new regulation, should be, exempt from the new rule change. Yesterday, I drove 170 miles yesterday to get here. Driving here, I drove through Steamville, Hyco, Hamilton, Lampasas. I saw a large number bodies of private water. There is a healthy population of turtles in the state of Texas. It's up to the individual turtle trapper to manage their resource. Parks and Wildlife should manage it also. Your law enforcement is very efficient at enforcing game laws. I've been trapping now for this my third year. I do not go back and trap the same bodies of water the second time. I do plan to go back in years from now. I've got landowners that are already asking me, when are you coming back? There's a high game fence near where I'm at, the Wild Turkey Ranch, and I ran into the lady the other day, and she told me, or asked me if I'm going to come back. They'd been seeing more turtles. I've never put traps in the tank, and when I leave, not seeing turtles. Not all turtles are going to get in a trap. They do eat fish. I've heard a comment that they don't eat fish, but if you put vegetation in the trap, you're not going to get any turtles. You catch turtles with fish. There's public health issues, but people are catching fish and eating fish out of these same streams and rivers. If they're eating fish, they should be able to eat turtles. That would be something where park miles have to come up and say, you know, that there is no trapping allowed in these creeks or streams, rivers. I've seen where there's advisories to keep you from fishing in certain areas because of chemicals are in the waters, and those same advisories could be in effect for the turtles. The only gentleman I saw I have, what I brought in, I decided not to go with that.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for your time. Ellis Gilland and Bob Popwell will be ready.
My name is Ellis Gilland. I'm speaking for an animal rights organization on the internet called Texas Animals. I've given you two handouts. The first handout is an excerpt from your proposed regulation changes. The second handout is an article in the Houston Chronicle on the 11th of March, 2006, Snakes Charm Roundup Crowds. The article pertains to the Sweetwater, Texas annual rattlesnake roundup, and I want you to notice that the amount of involved is not 10 or 20 or 100 or 1,000 snakes. We're talking about 9 tons. 9 tons of rattlesnakes. So it's pretty much over the top. And I'd like to ask Dr. McKinney how his science review pertains to 9 tons of rattlesnakes being collected. It sort of makes his science review a farce as far as I'm concerned. The science could not support that. My request is that you take the 6 rattlesnakes off your proposed white list, and in effect that would kill the Sweetwater rattlesnake roundup. To me, this is like analogous to, you talk about over the top, this is analogous to your chairman, Lee Bass, killing 1,000 to 2,000 white-tailed deer from his 3 helicopters. It's just over the top, unreal, and absurd. My open track record request tomorrow will ask you for your support for the many years of this rattlesnake roundup, of how you support that biologically and scientifically. I would like to see that in writing, please. The second thing I gave you is the excerpt from the regulation. You'll notice the first line it says, would remove provisions recording possession limits. That's a fraud, that's a lie, that's a farce, because you do not remove possession limits. If you look further down in your statement, it says, there's a limit of 6 on personal, and then you say, oh, you also have 25. So my recommendation is that you send 10 game wardens to Sweetwater for the next roundup and say, give citations and fine all the people that have over 25 rattlesnakes. You'll make several $1 million because they'll be out there getting them. Because they think that that's a political clout. Well, let's see you go up against people with 9 tons of rattlesnakes. Please. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gillen. Bob Popwell, please. And Carrie Mitchell, be ready.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I appreciate the opportunity to address you this afternoon. I've spoken quite a bit in position papers and various documents I shared with you, and certainly seeing your staff over the last few months. And I'm really here to talk practicality. I've heard a lot of stuff here today, but I focused in on a few key things, and that is that no one's willing to stand up and tell you they have solid data to make a decision either way. There's nothing that justifies excluding or including realistically anything on either one of the lists, the black or the white. I hear that data's lacking. None of our esteemed professors, who we honor with their scientific knowledge, is willing to stand up and tell you they've got irrefutable data to tell you how to make your decisions. We do have to get this right. And to get it right, I think we have to all back off and take a study and lay in your hands irrefutable data for the first time. We could talk on and on both sides of this forever. I would like to sit at a table, and I would pledge to do so. I think every dealer and every collector in Texas would, along with other vested interests, and be ready for the 2009 season, a little over 1 year away, have a solid program that you could adopt. Not one species that was referenced today, and your own staff told you they're not willing to say that any of these are threatened. They are not. During this study, effective design would consider things like look at the amount of public water versus private water. Look at habitat issues, including increased habitat with new ponds being built on private waters. Analyze the markets. What's happening with the emerging markets? What markets are ebbing? And some of them are, gentlemen. Look at the extensive pool of landowner input. People who control 90% of the land in Texas didn't even know we're talking about this. Trust me, they did not know. I had a rancher just yesterday say, I've never read the Texas Register. I'm too busy feeding my cows and mowing hay. And so that's an honest legal effort to communicate, but it's not realistic for landowners. We need to obtain broad and detailed input from all vested interests, including parks and wildlife, landowners, and any stakeholders, including commercial operators. We have to have a lot of field study, and I volunteered with senior staff to do some studies with them. Let me show them my trapping technique and my training process for the people that work with us in this program. I think you'll see some things that are important. I would recommend you guys raise the license fees for dealers. That's me. But raise it substantially for out-of-state dealers. We heard that out-of-state places are coming here because we're more loose than they are. Make them pay for that, sir. And I think you'll find that that's not only raising fees, it cuts down that problem a little bit. All during this time, we're all participating in a well-designed study to generate what? A solid program with everyone's input that is balanced between the commercial aspects and all other stakeholders. So that by the 2009 season, you have in advance adopted a comprehensive and complex and balanced approach to handling all non-game. We seem to focus just on turtles here at the last minute. It makes no more reason, although I love compromise and I'm telling you that private waters versus public is better than nothing, it makes no more reason to stop rattlesnake hunting on public land or gathering lizards or Texas green toads, all of which are still on the list. Thank you.
Commissioner Parker?
Sir, do you keep a record of how many turtles that you export out of Texas, like from DFW Airport? Do you keep a record?
Yes, sir, I do. I have to for my report.
Could you share with us how many turtles you have exported that came out of Texas in the past 24 months?
I can't tell you in 24 months wise. I could look at my data and tell you, but I can tell you I've been gathering turtles and snakes and other animals since 1959.
No.
Well,
I don't care about that.
It answers your question.
Just the last, break it down, last 12 months and then the 12 months before that.
I'd say we've exported probably 12,000 in the last 12 months, probably 2.5 times that over the past 24 months. And the reason there's been a suppressing element just from this discussion and publicity out there, people haven't hunted like they were. It's not near the number.
12,000 in the last 12 months.
Excuse me?
12,000 in the last 12 months. And then the 12 months prior to that?
Approximately 2.5 times that, because none of this controversy suppressed the turtle harvest at all. It's not near the numbers.
2.5 times that amount, so that would be 30,000.
Possibly, but sir, many of those are hatchlings that we raised ourselves. They didn't come from the wild population whatsoever. I would urge a tabling, gentlemen.
Thank you. Next up, Terry Mitchell and Roy Murillo, to be ready.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Thank you for your time. My name is Terry Mitchell. I'm from the University of Texas at Arlington. And I'm here to support the adoption of Commission Agenda Item Number 5, most importantly to prevent the unsustainable harvesting of one of our state resources. Also, as a Texas kelinologist, not only because I have a great love and admiration for this lineage, but as a young Texas kelinologist, I'd like to have some job security when these guys over here retire. Mm-hmm. I did some research for 2 years, and I also noticed a decline in abundance and a decline in diversity compared to what historically was in that area as far as turtles go. particularly snapping turtles. And my specialty is bioaccumulation, and I want to take this opportunity to mention that there are four other states in the United States that have advisories against the consumption of freshwater aquatic turtle meat. And given the fish advisories in our state, I think the consumption of Texas freshwater aquatic turtle meat is ill-advised this time. That's all I have to add. Thank you.
Thank you. Roy Murillo and John Crickmer, be ready.
My name is Roy Murillo, and I come from all the way from El Paso, Texas. I drove all the way down here. The gas is a lot cheaper here, by the way. My condition being here is that there's a lot of animals out there, and a lot of animals that are having taken from the wild, you know, but I'm a non-game dealer, and not only do I go out and catch turtles, I catch snakes, I catch rodents, I catch a lot of other species. I put there, I gave a list just a little while ago. I came with over 500 signatures to keep the turtles on the pet tree. There's a lot of people that still have turtles in their backyard, pets. And they multiply. They're all ladies that have them, and they don't want to give them up. And a lot of the talk that I hear here is just water turtles, water turtles, water turtles. Now, I'm where there's a lot of box turtles, and there is a lot of box turtles out there. Now, I can't collect as many box turtles as a bird could eat in a day, and I can't collect as many as they get run over every day. But all I'm trying to do is to take what I can collect and make use of it as somebody's pet. A lot of the gathering of data, I don't believe it's all getting turned in. And there's a lot of other species of animals out there that the gathering of data needs to be, you know, enforced for. There's longer, at least a couple of years of data, or another year of data, that all species should be turned in, not just the water turtles, but land turtles, snakes, rodents. Like I said, you've taken on some of the lists that you have there. You've taken orders of kangaroo rats. They're not on the list. I catch orders of kangaroo rats. Ariums are on the list. They're a little smaller, but everything else, banner tails are on the list. Porcupines, they're not on the list. I have porcupines as pets. My time's run up, but I just wanted to say it. There's a lot of other stuff that I could bring up into here. You know, all the land developers, they destroy a lot of land out there where we catch a lot of animals. And there's traffic that, like I say, kills. There's bug sprayers that go out and kill from mosquitoes and other animals. Yes, sir.
Thank you very much, Mr. Murillo. Thanks for making the trip. And we've got John Crickmer up, and then Lane Jordan. Hope I pronounced your name right.
Thank you for allowing me to address this issue before you, and thank you for bringing this issue to the forefront. It's been on my mind all my life. Caught my first turtle when I was 6 years old in Lancaster, Texas. It was a Mississippi mud turtle. My qualifications as an advocate for turtles all my life are that this is a very important issue. There are many factors driving the extinction and extirpation of turtles throughout the world. And it seems somewhat discriminatory to pick on those that collect them for the pet trade, and that's not what I know in my experience of over 48 years handling turtles on a personal basis. A real factor in their extinction extermination. You've got global warming, you've got habitat fracture, you've got people, Billy Bob, that likes to use them for target practice and Joe Gale that likes to squash them on the pavement for a kick. I've never done any of that stuff. My point is that we shouldn't, it's like sticking your head in the sand, this approach. We have the academicians that say they have studied Texas tortoises since 69. They are protected. They are still declining, and they don't know why. Well, it's certainly not the collectors, because they haven't been allowed to since the early 70s. And we have another academician that says that he's not really sure what we should do, but this is a start, and I agree. I've traveled all over the world and observed reptiles firsthand due to my personal interest in nature. I was in junior high school when I first had snake eggs. I have a commercial dealer's permit right now. I collect juvenile turtles only. That's no stress on the population. Taking adult females stresses the population. A rule to not take or sell adult turtles would be in order at this point. Studying the numbers, collecting the data, allowing the universities the opportunity to do peer-reviewed studies, legitimate studies, rather than all these articles, this hysteria in the newspapers. I think that's the approach to take. And I thank you for your time. Any questions?
Thank you very much, Mr. Christopher. Lane Jordan and then Daryl Ackerman, be ready.
Hi. I'm Lane Jordan. I speak for a group of turtle farmers from North Texas. We actually have a turtle farm in McKinney, so I drove down from there. The first point I'd like to make after sitting here this morning is I do have great respect for the Texas Pork and Wildlife to even say we've got a problem, and I also respect all the conservationists back there because I feel that we are, and that's why we have a turtle farm. But I need to backtrack on what I originally wanted to say, which is we are concerned. For us, it seemed like this was all of a sudden urgency in a seemingly swift process. There wasn't enough adequate foreknowledge of these proposals. From the data that I got from Mr. McDonald's office, it looked like the proposal was written on the 20th. We got it around the 12th of May and then this hearing on the 24th, so we felt like there wasn't enough time. Because obviously we're concerned about many of our jobs and livelihoods are in jeopardy. We're also concerned because the turtle business is an example of the American free enterprise system. It is conducted from our viewpoint as a fair trade business, as well as it adds to the global market, which is a plus for Texas. As farmers, we must be protective of the natural resources and the environment, or our farm production is not going to continue. So for us personally, in our turtle farm in McKinney, we put back into the environment as well as protecting and growing these resources. I'd like you all to also reflect on some of the other natural resource businesses that had been in trouble in the past, and they were able to find some solutions, such as the salmon fish industry. You know, it was going to go into extinction, and so they developed farms so that they can produce the salmon along with trout. I know that crawfish, shrimp, lobster, and crab are harvested pretty much without stop. I don't know the data for that, but I just know that it's going on, so I don't understand why that's not a major problem in turtles are. We also foresee that if this proposal passes as is, the turtle population will increase, and that will hurt and damage the fish population, which will, of course, affect those jobs related to those fish farmers. Please also foresee the many businesses that would be affected if this proposal as is passes. There are so many businesses that sell the feed, materials, supplies, the different jobs, the tax base, along with the decreased value of the land if this proposal. I also know, as the gentleman before me mentioned, that there are many ranchers who cannot stand turtles on their land and they go out and shoot them. The turtle farmers that we are help to protect the turtles by carefully trapping and relocating them to the turtle farm. We also feel, even though some very educated people were before me, we don't feel that enough data has been collected for this proposal. I know these are teaching professors. Some of them, I greatly respect the experiences that they've had, but from our end, we still feel like there hasn't been enough data. Further, we also feel like, as I mentioned earlier, there hasn't been enough time from the farmer's side for this proposal. My request for this proposal is to please do not make a sudden and rash decision on something that could be a wonderful contribution to our communities, our people, in the great state of Texas. Please allow the turtle business to continue. Please don't pass this proposal as is. And again, if you could look at perhaps some of us that have the turtle farms. I know my time is up, but I wanted to say to go out and harvest everything, of course, doesn't make sense. But we've been in business for 3 or 4 years, and I would not have taken the time or trouble to come down here if I didn't feel that what we were doing is really a good way. We also do export, but we are going into Asia to reintroduce the species, and we have a farm there. So we're mainly getting the species, cultivating the eggs, and shipping mainly the eggs over there. So you have a hard job ahead of you. I don't know what the answer is, but I know there are some of us turtle farmers who are trying to keep the business going and protect the species.
I think you'll find a lot of sentiment that wants to encourage turtle farming and commercialization of it, harvested.
Yes.
Aquaculture. Matt, do you know which species they handle and how they would be treated under this regulatory alternative? Which species do you raise, Matt?
It's the soft shell and the common snapping turtle.
Would you mind telling her how she'll be treated under this regulatory alternative?
Yes, thank you.
Yes, we will grandfather those with existing collections. We've heard from a number of box turtle collectors. We've tried to address all of the aquatic turtle farms in Texas, and we just weren't able to dig them up. Ms. Jordan has approached us a couple of weeks ago, I believe, and we have talked about her, but those operations will be grandfathered, and we will work with them to develop a process for turtle farming.
Will they do all of most of the turtle farms raising species on this list, on the regulatory alternative list?
Most of the turtle farms that we're aware of, I know the ones in Louisiana raise a lot of red-eared sliders, mostly for the pet trade. That market is depressed and moving into other turtles, we understand, and we need to understand how they run those programs.
So as far as you know, the regulatory alternative will not put any of the turtle farmers out of business?
No.
Thank you. Daryl Ackerman? Can Deborah Sidney be ready?
Gentlemen of the board, as a commercial dealer and holding a commercial dealer's permit, in November we were asked to come to a meeting about the non-game collector's permit and talked over with Mr. Wagner in very great detail, and we're very open and honest with him about how we do our things in the field, what things we have problems with in the field, how to make the permit better. Since 1999, there's been few collectors that I know personally that we have gathered data along with many snake shows, which mainly is my area of interest, not the turtle. Although the turtle species, to my knowledge, will be greatly affected if you do stop harvesting of them. It's just like taking a rattlesnake. You stop harvesting a rattlesnake, when they were digging a school here in Pflugerville, Texas, a taco operator dug up 86 of them at one time. Are you going to leave those where there's a middle school? You're not. They're going to become a nuisance. Various calls that I do around the state of Texas and into the Austin area, there's still rattlesnakes in the Austin area. I believe that if you do stop the harvest of turtles, that they will become a nuisance, just like the rattlesnake. Mr. Gillum, I don't know where he has got his facts, but in 2006 there was 13,000 pounds of rattlesnakes harvested out of Sweetwater, Texas. in 2007, Sweetwater put a price cap on the rattlesnakes that they were buying. Myself, I do not collect snakes or buy snakes that were gassed. I do not like to endanger the species. We are specific about the way we do things, and I believe the turtle harvesters are the same way. In 2007, the Sweetwater show only collected 5,300 pounds. As a past president of the Taylor JCs and the National Rattlesnake Sacking Championship for 2 years, I chaired the show for 6 years. I've been buying snakes at that show for 10 years. Folks, I'm 26 years old. I bought snakes when I was 16 years old, and I've been handling snakes since I was 14 years old. We have only bought in the excess of 500 pounds in Taylor, Texas. The snakes are not depreciating at all. The snake population is still growing. Unfortunately, I do not have the literature with me at this time. There's been a publication just published by a gentleman from Texas A&M that says we only cover about 3% of the area in the state of Texas when we hunt rattlesnakes. I believe the same thing could happen to the turtle. These gentlemen aren't covering the full basis of where they can be hunted. There's no way no man can cover the whole area. I went to San Marcos, Texas about 3 weeks ago. A lady called me out there and begged me to come to her property, that she had had her son bit, and 2 weeks later she had had her nephew bit. One at the front porch, walking out the front door, one underneath the car, both bit by Rattlesnake Lane at Brackenridge Hospital. I can't go down the side of a cliff face. I'm not Evel Knievel, and I'm not going to hunt snakes on the side of a cliff in wet weather. She was very unhappy with me. But it's a known fact. We can't cover all the area. You can't cover all the stream. And I'm out of time. I appreciate y'all hearing what I have to say, and I wish y'all would table this matter and look at it further.
Thank you very much. Deborah Sidney and Travis LeDuc, are you ready?
Good morning. My name is Deborah Sidney, and I'm here to basically say that I'm in favor of a 100% ban on all commercial collection of turtles in the state of Texas. Several reasons that I'm in favor of this. First is, if you allow it on public property, or excuse me, on private property and not on public, it is very difficult to tell when you do encounter a person with turtles, where do those turtles come from. They can say it's from a private pond. You can't prove it. The other reason for that is that turtles do, in fact, migrate. Just look at the number of turtles you find smashed on a road. They're moving. Why are they moving? In the spring, it's because they're going to lay eggs. They leave the water sources they're normally in. They go seek out land. There's not a single turtle that lays its eggs in the water. They all go to land, usually a distance away from the water. Especially in the case of box turtles. Now, primarily, we've been talking about aquatics here. Box turtles do travel. They'll seek out a cornfield that's been freshly plowed. That's where they like to lay, one of the places. We haven't exactly said, do we get to collect box turtles on private property? We've talked about private lakes, private water. What about private property? Anytime a turtle crosses the road to go from a public stream or lake to a private pond, that turtle is fair game to be collected. Now, one of the main reasons that I think we should have this proposed ban, at least initially, is that it's very difficult to do a comprehensive study and gather adequate population figures. When you go into an area and you do a count, only have a collector follow behind you and collect those animals you just counted. It's a moving target. We may say, oh, we have lots of turtles, only to find out that somebody came and gathered them all. We need to have this moratorium. We need to have the ban, at least while we do the comprehensive study. When we reach a point when we do understand our population levels, it makes perfect sense to go ahead and allow the commercial collection of those species that are, number one, a nuisance and are in excess. Primarily, a red-haired slider would be a great candidate even today. But we have another problem in that most of the authorities cannot identify one turtle from another. What's a red-haired slider? How's that different from a cooter? Most people cannot tell on first sight, as has been mentioned earlier today. We need to have education of the people who will be enforcing the rules. I said 100% ban, clear cut. Guy's got a bag of turtles, it's illegal, no matter where he got them from. Do a study. Once we know what our situation is, reevaluate it. But you can't do an adequate study if people are collecting them right from underneath your counts. And that's what I have to say. Thank you. Questions?
Thank you very much. Travis LeDuc and Tim Cole, be ready.
Good morning. My name is Travis LeDuc. I'm the assistant curator of herpetology at the Texas Natural History Collections here at the University of Texas at Austin, as well as I'm the president of the Texas Herpetological Society. And I'm speaking primarily on behalf of the Texas Herpetological Society. We're an organization of professionals, academics, as well as simply hobbyists very interested in herpetology in this state. I recently had the chance to talk to a number of our members at a field meet earlier this month, and every member I talked to was very encouraged by the level of interactions between the commissioners, between Matt Wagner's staff, and herpetologists around the state. We're extremely heartened that this sort of interaction is going on, and we really look forward to continued discussions with everyone involved. We are in support of these regulations, primarily from one standpoint, and we can't go back if we find out later on that not imposing this ban wasn't a good thing. If we let this continue for another few years and we realize this boom bust of this three to five year flow cycle of, you know, the boom and then bust of turtle markets, if we realize 2 years down the road when we didn't implement this that, oops, we were in the middle of that, how do we go back? We don't go back. The resource is gone. Or the resource is going to take 50 plus years in order to get back to any sort of sustainable level. It was also heartening earlier to hear Commissioner Parker talk about in the discussion about the inland fisheries, about increasing emphasis on looking at habitat and non-recreational species. And I think that's exactly, taking from fisheries to herpetology in this case, I think that's exactly what we're looking for. Non-game is a large portion of the wildlife out there, and there's a lot from which we don't really know. And we, at least the Texas Herpetological Society and myself, really welcome this opportunity to gather more data. I'm particularly a snake guy, and so I really am looking forward to seeing the number of snakes that are commercially traded and be able to look at numbers of species and look at the provenance of these animals. So we actually gather more data to make more concerted and smart decisions later on. I don't see this ban right now as being a permanent ban. I think that with increased knowledge, we're gonna learn a lot more, and we're gonna be able to tweak some of these rules. Much like Ms. Sidney just said, you know, perhaps we're gonna see later on red-eared spiders are a great candidate to allow for commercial collection. But I think until the point which we have data, I think it's really important to take a step back and hold on to the Texas heritage, to our wildlife, for the members of the state. Thank you.
Thank you. Tim Cole and Jim Ott, be ready.
I come to you as a past licensed rehabilitator, president of Wildlife Rescue in the past, president of the Austin Herpetological Society, also the owner of an educational business concerning reptiles. I want to put out a big thanks to Matt Wagner and Dwayne Schwitter for soliciting information from the state herpetological associations and societies. I appreciate the chance to give some input prior to this meeting. I'd like to talk about the captive breeding and grandfathering. I'm big in favor of that. I think the turtle farms that are raising for whatever purpose, whether it's meat or pets, is great. That stops animals from coming out of the wild. I'm a big supporter of that. I think the grandfathering clause is an interesting issue because there are a lot of organizations that have taken in rescue animals. Box turtles are number one. A lot of these animals have gone into the pet trade, haven't been taken care of properly, or have, for whatever reason, been abandoned. They can't be turned back into the wild. so these animals have been placed in good homes. In regards to public and private water turtle collecting, as it's already been stated, they travel a lot. And having been a rehabber, I've gotten a lot of injured turtles over the years. I get a lot of emails and phone calls to identify turtles. For instance, I got one yesterday from a horse ranch in Niederwald. It said, we've got an alligator snapper on our property. We understand they're protected. We've been trying to call somebody to find out what we need to do with this animal. And my knowledge of alligator snappers is they don't survive in Central Texas. So I asked her to send me some photographs, which she did on email, and it was a common snapper. I found it ironic that she has lived there for 20 years and has never seen a common snapper on her property before. They're moving. Okay? And they're moving for several reasons. Drought, egg laying, flooding, all three of these things cause these animals to move. So collecting from public and private is going to be the same thing. I'd like to say one more thing before I finish. This is in regards to rattlesnake roundups. I'm really disappointed in the support the Parks and Wildlife seems to issue to the circus and the cruelty involved with roundups. As far as safety issues go, I do educational programs. I help out landowners who have issues with snakes. We point out why they're there, what's attracting them, what you can do to discourage them, how you can get along with the wildlife. There's lots of different ways to do this without killing it, without being cruel. And that's it. I appreciate being able to talk tonight.
Thank you.
Thank you very kindly. My name is James Ott. I'm the faculty at Texas State University, and my interest is in mathematical population ecology. I'm particularly interested in what regulates the size, distribution, and abundance of species. And that's a deep problem, one which TPWD has to effectively grapple with here. I previously submitted comments of which I made five major points, and they were entered into the record in the public comment session. I want to just focus on a couple of those comments here, given time constraints. However, I wish I had an identical twin who could spend three more minutes talking about the philosophical and ethical issues that are at place here, but I won't. First point, any proposed plan to harvest a non-game wildlife resource in the state of Texas must include three things: a basic element of a harvest strategy, background data on the ecological status of the species, and informed, if not reliable, projections of future population status as a consequence of the entire range of harvest scenarios. That information is lacking for all non-game species. An informed plan would include, at a minimum, knowledge of the species distribution, estimates of population size, and, as important, how variable those population sizes are. A life table analysis, which is an explicit treatment of how age and fecundity and mortality are interrelated. It matters. A population of 1,000 made up of 2-year-olds will have a different population configuration sometime into the future compared to a population made up of the equivalent number of geriatrics. Okay? In addition, one needs to have effects of harvest level scenarios on a population's viability. This is exactly what's done with white-tailed deer and others. In addition, there needs to be information on the effects of planned harvest with respect to size, sex, etc. Next, one must recognize that natural forces, as many speakers have said today, interact with any planned commercialization. So assessing the role of environmental stochasticity is a difficult job. Next, there has to be an effective plan of reporting, and there has to be a plan to adjust harvest strategies based on feedback mechanisms. Wildlife managers recognize this critically. Think about how much time and attention is given to making a small antler size restriction in Texas, okay? Et cetera, et cetera. My second point, ultimately sustainability must be guaranteed, not suggested by any plan that is to be approved for implementation. Third point, it's the commissioner's responsibility by law to the citizens of the state of Texas to protect the state's non-game wildlife resources. And with respect to the action that's being considered now, I have a simple argument to make, and the argument is this. The commissioners must stop unregulated harvest in the state's waters as no information currently warrants unregulated harvest. So I'm going to take the same lack of information and use it completely differently than the commercialization advocates have. Because the state of Texas lacks the information to construct an informed harvest policy for any, if not all, currently unregulated species, it is not possible for the commission to approve a plan to allow commercial harvest that would follow accepted best management practices. Thank you very much.
Mr. Ott, that's a very good point that I think
I would like Matt to...
Sure. Ask him a question, Commissioner.
Can you speak to the last argument?
essentially, he's right. We don't have hard data to restrict or allow. What we do know is that there is an unlimited demand. There's an unlimited restriction, no restriction, and we're taking steps to move towards sustainability. We know that we're going to need to monitor this practice and come back to you.
Are you saying that we have a responsibility to an unlimited demand?
No. What I'm saying, that's the way it is right now. Right now we have an unlimited demand.
We have no responsibility to that unlimited demand.
Yes, sir.
Is that correct?
Yeah, but
I mean,
I think we're back to this point again, and I think Mr. Ott put it very well. We're not proposing a program. Right now it's unrestricted. We're taking steps in restriction, and it's really a chicken and the egg situation, is that if I understand Mr. Ott correctly, and he's obviously very knowledgeable in the area, is because there's no data, you should go to a complete ban. Today, we have no restrictions whatsoever. So nobody's proposing something, a new program. We're taking the first step in restriction and regulation to protect the resource. The point's been made, Heather Lowe and others have made it, Mr. Van Dyke, which is hard to avoid, and that is that nowhere in the world that's been subjected to the Asian food demand has the turtle population survived. And what we're asking is there a way we can find, either through farming or other ways, a sustainable way to do that in a short period of time to collect the data? Now, is it easier to collect data with these dealers out there reporting to us in an above-board legal way, or is it easier to collect data when you ban everything and hope and kind of guess what's going on in the black market? I don't know. The goal is to get the data to manage the resource. So, you know, Matt, can you address that? How's it easier to get the data?
We need to know the level of demand, the level of take. We have that information. We know how many dealers there are. We know what's been reported to us on the numbers of turtles and other non-game that are being driven by commercial use. And I think if we can act today on the proposal before you, we can ensure that our public waters would be protected from commercialization. That will set up a situation where there will be a reservoir for turtles in Texas. We're not concerned about the imminent threat to the three turtles we talked about. They're commercially important. We want the information.
I started this, and I've got a few more people that want to testify. Just three more. Let's go through those last three folks testifying, and then we're going to have a long discussion about this, I'm sure, with Matt and other staff members. And I may call Mr. Ott up again, because the population dynamics is what this is about. Matt, have a seat, and I will call up Ed Neal. Ed Neal, and then Kirby Brown, be ready, and then Janice Bajanson will be our closer.
Hi, thank you for the opportunity to speak. I think I may be one of the only hobbyists who just
really doesn't have a commercial interest in any of the goings-on. But I'm just here as, like some of the people here, I've been a fan of turtles for a number of years, and so this is something that was important to me. My name's Ed Neal. I'm from Dallas. So I just wanted to say that I am in support of proposed amendments to the rules, and specifically the exclusion of the turtles from the whitelist. I am against any modification to the amendments that would allow for even limited commercial collection. I know in the material I read on the website, they talked about some comments or some proposals that were mentioned here, bag limits, season limits. And I don't think that those are, in practice, probably as useful as they might be for hunting mammals, because for some of the reasons that were mentioned, these turtles, specifically snappers, in the wild can live to be 100 years old, and they can't repopulate themselves very quickly. So if you take it out in September, even if there's only a four-week hunting period, the fact that it was in season for only a month isn't going to help it. It's not going to rejuvenate itself quickly enough. What I wasn't aware of by reading the information on the website was that we would continue to allow, I guess, commercial harvesting of turtles on private land. And I understand there's a need for a compromise here. And my presumption is that it would probably, the rules as proposed would make it a lot more difficult for this commercial industry to continue, although there's still going to be pressure on it. Seems to satisfy some of the requirements of what you're after, which is to put the brakes on the practice, but still allow some people who are active in the business to keep on going. Eventually, I'd like to see it get eliminated. There's no question in my mind that what's driving the bus here is the demand for turtle meat in Asia. And it's completely separate from the demand for turtles for the pet trade. I can't imagine that some of the numbers that you would see 100,000 turtles shipped out of Dallas-Fort Worth going to private collectors in Ohio or any other state. There's just not that kind of a demand. And frankly, I would imagine the demand for box turtles probably in the Asian markets isn't as high as well. But I think it's fair also to say that even if it weren't for the demand for food in Asia, that a lot of these animals are already under pressure from environmental constraints. There's a lot of, I'm in the real estate business, so I know there's a lot of real estate development going on out there. So they're losing habitat, there's a lot more pollution, there's a lot of roads where we all see turtles dead on the side of the road. So even without this demand, they need protection. So I see I'm out of time, but I hope that at least my perspective as somebody who's just a concerned citizen who took the time to come up here and make a statement on the behalf will be taken into consideration. Thanks.
It will. Thank you for your comments and for your time, Mr. Neal. Kirby Brown. And then Janice, be ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. My name is Kirby Brown, Executive Vice President of Texas Wildlife Association. And the Texas Wildlife Association members are hunters, landowners, and conservationists who own or control over 35 million acres in Texas. We support the staff proposal that's presented today. We think this is a good start at this. We agree that good data is critical. We're willing to help. We're concerned about confidentiality, maybe a few other issues. We want to work with staff on a few of these things as we go forward, but we think we are going to be very able to work with Matt and the staff, the scientists. Many are my friends. We'll be able to work with the collectors and the propagators and come back to you in a year or so with probably some good things that I think will continue to go down this path. I firmly believe, and I think it's been consistently shown that private landowners with good information are going to protect their natural resources. And that's the kind of information we want to get over the next year and get out to people. And I think those are important. Again, it's a good start. It's a good compromise proposal. It's a good way to move right now. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. Yes?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission.
I'm Janice Vivanson. I'm the executive director of the Texas Conservation Alliance. Recently renamed that. We've long been known as the Texas Committee on Natural Resources, or TCONR. We're a 40-year-old conservation organization that is the state affiliate of the National Wildlife Federation. I am extremely impressed with the attention that the Commission is giving to this. The level of knowledge evidenced in your questions is very, very high. Even without the Chairman's repeated reminders, I am acutely aware that what y'all are doing is moving from no regulation to restrictions, and we appreciate that deeply. We are supporting and asking you to go with a complete ban. And I think it comes down to four very brief points. One is the contamination issue. We're talking about mercury, PCBs, chlordane, DDT, toxaphene, dieldrins, some pretty heavy stuff. And the tendency of turtles to bioaccumulate these over the years and the long life of the turtles makes this a very serious issue. The second issue is law enforcement. As Dr. Flanagan was saying, even the experts can't look at a bunch of turtles in there and real quickly tell them apart. And in the time that a law enforcement person is going to have at DFW Airport before the plane leaves, we're going to wind up shipping out some turtles that are on the banned list. And even the ones that are legal, you can't tell where they came from. Was it public or private waters? Third point, the box traps and hoop nets that are routinely used in collecting these turtles kill everything. They don't just catch turtles that aren't on the list. They catch a lot of other aquatic and animals that live near the water. So this is a very serious ecosystem, ecological impact that needs to be seriously considered. The fourth one, and this is the biggie, is what you've heard over and over today from experts, is that turtle populations don't recover. The data we have now is self-reported data. It's useful, but it's not like having a scientist do it. But what you're hearing the scientists say, most specifically Dr. Van Dyke made this as clear as it can be made, is that turtle populations don't recover. It is our responsibility, the responsibility of the Commission, and the responsibility of us as citizens to protect wild populations. So we very much urge that you will go for the rule as published and completely ban the harvest of turtle populations. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Janice. I mean, couldn't have planned any better. I think you've recapped very succinctly the issues there that we're now going to discuss. And thanks for doing that. I did not plan that.
Well, I did.
Obviously, you're better prepared.
Thank you.
Thank you for all your help this year and all the other issues we've been working on together. I really appreciate it.
Well, we appreciate very much what the Commission has done. Y'all have just been wonderful in the legislature, and you're doing a terrific job.
Thank you. Well, let's tackle this one now. Okay. Shall we begin? Questions? Commissioner Parker? For staff?
Yes. For Matt? Pardon me, Mr. Wagner.
the red lights off.
Quite an interesting discussion.
Can you turn it on?
I've got my red light on here. Y'all can't see it, but I got my own red light here. Mr. Wagner. If we implement the new recommendation that you have laid out for us to placate our great partners, the private landowners, who have lakes that they want to see the turtle population controlled in, did you feel like that this will give you an added tool to gather your data, or would it be easier for you to gather your data with a total ban?
I think either way we have a challenge in front of us to try and monitor every species that has commercial value is going to be very difficult. A ban, obviously, from a biological standpoint, would take that pressure away. The question that we have is the current level of use and the projected future demand sustainable?
So what you're saying is that if we go with this new amended proposal to your original proposal at the last commission meeting, that we are going to ramp up a huge avenue with many, many streets in it for law enforcement, while we are trying to decide if these new amendments have any effect on our turtle population.
We have been engaged with law enforcement every step of the way. We've been talking to them about how to handle this situation if the commission should decide to go with a public-private split. We believe we can do it. This approach has not been taken in other states.
What has been done in other states?
There are two states that are similar to Texas in terms of unrestricted use, New Jersey and South Carolina.
What about the other states?
Most other states are fairly more restrictive. Only about a half a dozen have a total ban.
What states are those?
Kansas, Montana, Tennessee. Some of these states allow maybe a turtle like common snapper, but most of their turtle trade has been banned. Maryland, Virginia, Ohio. Most other states, if there's not a total ban, they do approach it from a more specific standpoint in terms of a season or a possession limit.
Those states that have banned them, do they allow for the taking on private lands?
Yes, they don't make a distinction between public and private.
They ban it, period.
They either ban or limit the number of states that do have a total ban. Most all other states have some other form of restriction. But when you ask them the question, how have these rules improved turtle populations, they have the same dilemma. They do not have the resources to manage the populations. They strictly look at it from a take standpoint. And that's the information that we have and we want to continue to get and get better information as we begin to narrow down which species are going to be used and which ones will not.
I don't want to miss any other. Commissioner Brown, do you have any questions for staff?
During the course of the various presentations, I know it was talked about the cost, really, I guess, to us to monitor, this whole program. And I guess in relation to the total economic benefit that there is out there for people that have permits that are actually selling turtles or whatever, what do we have any idea what kind of cost we're going to be looking at to get into this whole program of trying to regulate and research and in relation to really the impact on the number of people that are affected by this?
One of the unique sources of funding that we do have access to is our state wildlife grants. And these are federal dollars that are appropriated to the states to deal with issues like this, to be targeted towards non-game species, issues of concern, and we even have a Texas Wildlife Action Plan that will help us plan those expenditures. That's a 50-50 match. But we intend to use those dollars to match with non-federal sources like the universities to do work, and we will begin that September 1.
Right.
And just to add to that, we had a discussion about fees. I believe when we come back to you, we need to consider the fees for dealers. Currently, the resident dealer permit is $60. A non-resident is $240. So we can adjust those as needed.
Well, Mr. Brown, we need to assess scope, you know, and come up with a definition of methodology. It was outlined perfectly. We need to assess the law enforcement issues. Certainly have to work with appropriate agencies to study health issues, be cooperative in that effort as we would be, study tracking methodologies, look at population dynamics. But we're not going to have a sense of what that entails until you come back to us with a specific plan and methodology. So I would appreciate all your efforts and certainly encourage you to do that as quickly as possible.
Yeah, I agree with you, Commissioner Friedkin, and your chair of regulations, and you've been studying this more than any of us. I think it's clear anything we do today is a step in the right direction to protect the resource. On this law enforcement issue, I thought it was made pretty clear to us yesterday that it will require documentation. And somebody that said, hey, tell if it was caught wild or private. The documentation, my guess is, under oath, and you swear it came from somebody's pond and the game warden calls them and they didn't come from there, you're in trouble. And there's no way to do that on public water. So it's clear we've got to ban it on public water because there's no way to document where you took it. There's a phone number on the end of that document where those turtles came from. So that doesn't bother me as much as you know. I mean, what bothers me is that we're and I think we've got to take the opportunity to gather the data. It's going to be incumbent upon these dealers in this industry to show us that for the first time in history, it's possible to sustainably harvest in a commercial manner these turtles to satisfy the Asian market. But if they don't, if it really is the harvest unsustainable of our wild resource, we're going to ban it all. And I think we've, you know, for as much data and people involved and the opportunity for farming that's out there to develop, the lady that testified about the farm, I think we've got to take that opportunity to gather that data. But I think the standard that this commission is going to follow is clearly that we're not going to weigh the commercial opportunity against the depletion of a natural resource. If they can't prove it's sustainable, it goes.
The current proposal takes a positive step in that direction.
I think so.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
That was an excellent point that you just made. Are we absolutely positive that we can do this study, and I have every confidence in Mr. Wagner and every confidence in our law enforcement. But the one question that I have not heard answered is that are we just going to offer this resource carte blanche to any dealer that he can take as many as he can take at any one given time?
They can do that today. All right, let's be real clear. That's happening today. They can do that today. What we're asking staff to do is start with the regulation of banning all public waters, okay? And then take the step and asking the staff to come back with some parameters, methodology, as Sharon Friedman pointed out, on regulating the take on private.
Okay, I'll get through all mine at one time. I intend to vote for the proposal with the regulatory alternative attached. I'd be happy to make a motion when you're ready. And I want to address my questions under the assumption that passes and for what we do next. On the information question, I would appreciate when you come back if we could get some good statistical information that models the populations, even if they're not perfect. but with the goal of our sound science out there that may take several years to get to. What I think would not be the right approach is to gather minimal data only based on what's collected, and a year from now be sitting here saying, well, we only have so much data. I think we can get pretty valid statistical models with limited sampling and good biostatistical work that will help us put this in some kind of framework much better. So if you could make sure, and I think there's probably a low-cost way to do that that doesn't break the bank, that we can do with adequate resources and get done in time. It doesn't rely on the dealers to collect the real base data we're looking at, because to me it's a population sustainability question, as the chairman's saying. So I encourage us to do that. I think we can probably adhere to very high level of work statistically and recognize the variation we're probably living with, and that's legitimate. That's perfectly fine for right now for what we're doing. We're making a basic decision here with almost no information, but we ought to gather better information or model better information very quickly. So that's one. That gets you into the sustainability question. Intuitively, I don't buy the argument that there's no sustainability here. I think what we may very well find is there's no economic sustainability, which is a different question. But clearly, people are farming them, and they're making it economic, and we can all go take one turtle out of one pond and know that we have taken a sustainable quantity. It's a matter of degree, which gets back to good statistical modeling. I also think the other thing I would appreciate if you would keep as an underpinning this analysis is the assumption, unless we can prove it otherwise, that demand is not going to go away. And we have to rely, any policy is emotionally appealing to might be say, let's ban it here and we'll protect our resource. It's not going to happen if the demand's there. It does have economic value. You have to recognize it. You and I have had a short conversation with Chairman Friedkin and the Regulatory Commission, question on the ITQs. They work well in fisheries. I know there's probably a lot of complexity to adapting that model to a low-value economic resource, a multi-species resource, a lot of complexity that it may not work, I don't know, but I would like us to come back and understand the options in creating value in the resource matched against a scientifically justifiable, sustainable manner that recognizes demand and assumes that demand probably increases. So we've got to create a structure that works in an environment where regulation is limited efficacy, law enforcement is going to be tough, there is value, we've really got to enfranchise people to both have an incentive to conserve and an incentive to help us regulate and monitor some kind of statistical data. And we need to do it fairly soon, in fairness to the participants, but also as a way of protecting the resource. So that those would be my requests and the way to come back.
I'm glad you're remembering all the stuff you hope you did. I'll just add one more and then we'll take a motion. I want you to continue what you've been doing, working with the scientific community, Mr. Ott, Professor Dixon, Forster, and the others, because that's the standard that we've got to meet. And as I understand this, I mean, we're dealing with a population that, because of their longevity and reproductive characteristics, you've got to err on the side of caution, because when you make the dent in that population, the recovery time, if I'm correct, is so long that you've got to lead this, you've got to lead it,
right?
To use a hunting term, and if you don't, you're behind.
I recognize the complexity of population dynamics in the context of my discussion. I'm not taking a simplistic economic view. I do think economically of the classic tragedy of the commons, where nobody, the landowners or the public, has seen value here. So the quickest way is to go scoop it all the way up. But I know we're dealing
with it. I agree with you. I think at the end, if I had to guess, it's economically unsustainable. The only way it's economically sustainable is if they do it in a way that's ecologically unsustainable. But that's just my guess about it.
Yeah, a couple of points consistent with what Commissioner Montgomery was saying. I would like to see us have a monthly reporting as compared to an annual reporting so that we can get more current data, and perhaps this will help us gauge where we stand. And then two, I think we, taking again the holistic approach to game management and managed lander programs, I think we should incorporate the data gathering. Once we have a game biologist there doing a survey for deer, we might as well incorporate turtle populations. This would be an immediate source of data that we could incorporate, and it goes back to the holistic approach. And I agree with everyone. I think there's clearly two things. One, there's a demand, great demand, for the resource. And two, I don't think there's any evidence that we have an overabundance of turtles in this state. So if we're going to err, we have to err to protect the resource. And that's very simple.
Okay, well, everybody thinks all we do is talk about deer.
Yeah, right. Mr. Chairman, Matt, I appreciate your patience. On the regulatory alternative, you talk about the three, the red-eared slider, soft-shell turtles, and the common snapping turtle. If we go to a monthly reporting or quarterly, whatever you decide, is that if we see a dramatic increase of take, that you let us know or come back to us. This commission has a right to do whatever it needs to do. And if the demand truly is at the levels we're talking about, then I would assume you'll see a dramatic shift. And maybe the take goes up. And if it goes up to a point where we get nervous about it, then we may have to make other decisions. You just keep us informed.
Yeah, I may not have told all the commissioners this. I talked to our ag commissioner, Todd Staples, about this, and he's offered some of his staff to talk about some ideas of how we can come up with some regulations for a turtle farming. So you permit that and hopefully have a transition here. Entertain a motion.
I'd like to make a motion to adopt the current proposal with the recommended changes and to allow for commercial use from private property for red-eared sliders, soft-shell turtles, common snapping turtles.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, motion passes. Matt? I just came in there now. Don't tease the staff, right? Okay. Not after that. Well done, Matt. You've really worked hard, and I appreciate it.